You're asking me to break the law, Mason. I slumped into one of the chairs at my kitchen table. They endangered the welfare of a child. That's a chargeable offense. I wouldn't be doing my job.
And it's always about the job for you, isn't it?
Mason didn't slow his pacing. You knew that. Before we ever started this thing, you knew that. The job has to come first, I said dully, hating myself more with each word.
You're tearing my family apart. Don't you care about that even a little?
Mason's voice broke, spearing me as surely as a bullet piercing the Kevlar I wrapped my heart in. Of course I do. My voice was rough.
Do you care about me?
Mason stopped pacing and whirled to face me. You know I do. But Jimmy made his choices, not me.
Lilac has to stay with an emergency foster placement overnight. Did you know that? She's alone and scared and with a strange family. And the most they let me do was bring the social worker some clothes and her bear. There's going to be a hearing.
That's standard procedure, yes. I knew it was the wrong thing to say, and not at all soothing, but it was all I had.
Fuck standard procedure. You know me, Nash. You know she'd be better off with me than some stranger, and you couldn't even tell the social worker that? Couldn't get them to...
Are you seriously asking me to pull strings for you? Call in favors?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Mason all but threw himself into the chair opposite me. I couldn't do that. It would be a violation of every principle.
Fuck your principles, Nash. Fuck them.
As fast as he'd sat down, Mason was up again. I'd been working hard at staying calm, but now I felt my anger building. My principles are all I have.
Fuck that. You had me.
Had. Past tense. My heart cracked a little more. What happened today with Jimmy has nothing to do with us and what we have.
What we have? You won't introduce me to your mother, even as a friend. You're ashamed of me. Ashamed to be fucking a Hanks. And you don't think I'm worthy of...
I'm not ashamed of you, I said firmly, even as I knew my guilt was a real, palpable thing. But I couldn't have him thinking like that. My guilt and shame were my own deal. You knew going into this that I wasn't coming out.
Of course not.
Mason's voice was bitter as three-day-old coffee.
If it's not me you're ashamed of, it's you. And either way, there's nothing between us. Not now.
I know. I rested my face on my hands, unable to look at him a second longer. Jimmy thinks he's figured it out.
That's really why you didn't call me, isn't it? You were pissed at Jimmy, so you punished...
Don't be ridiculous, I said sharply. But if there's even a whiff of conflict of interest...
Here come your damn principles again.
Mason shook his head. I'm trying to save your ass. I rubbed my eyes. Last thing I need is them thinking your case for the kid is tainted, or them declaring a mistrial against Jimmy.
Can't have that, Mason snarled.
God, I wanted to hold him, wanted to soothe his ruffled edges. This wasn't like him, and I knew it was the stress speaking, but it still hurt.
You won't be happy until my whole damn family's behind bars.
Mason, don't tell me it's not like that. That's the real reason you've held back, not because of the age difference or you're not wanting to come out.
It's because I'm a Hanks. And that'll always mean I'm trash around here.
Mace, don't
Mason me.
I saw how that social worker looked at me.
Same way you always look at my brothers. Like trouble's just around the corner. She doesn't trust me. She let me fill out all the paperwork and stuff, but I could tell. And you could fix that, but you won't.
I can't. I couldn't believe he was asking this of me. Unable to sit any longer, I pushed away from the table, strode to the opposite side of the room. I'd be turning my back on everything I am, everything I've been for 20 years in law enforcement. I can't do that. Not for you, not for anyone. And trust me, if there was ever anyone I'd compromise myself for, it would be you.
But it's not me, is it? Not ever going to be. You'll deny it if Jimmy spews any rumors about us, of course. Can't have a hint of tarnish on your shiny halo. And you'll end this thing with me because it's the right thing to do. Well, screw right, Nash. And screw you.
I'm not telling you to lie, I said roughly. If they ask you point blank,
of course you're not asking me to lie. You're not asking me for a damn thing.
His voice was tortured, and I no longer had a clue what he wanted to hear from me. I'm not. I had a feeling it was the exact wrong words, but I didn't know what else to say. You're the one who's asking for impossible things.
Not anymore. Not asking you for jack crap now.
Mason's eyes narrowed as his face hardened.
I thought you had a heart, Nash. I was wrong.
I do. And it's breaking. But I didn't say that. Didn't stop him when he stalked to the door. Didn't call him back with an offer to talk to the social worker. Didn't tell him I'd go easy on Jimmy, if only he'd stay. Didn't tell him that I loved him, and that it was killing me to see him like this. Didn't cry when the door shut behind him, even as my eyes burned. It was better that I'd left the words unsaid, not told him the truth in my heart. I knew how to be a good cop. I knew how to do my job. I knew how to be a respectable man, but I wasn't sure I knew how to be the man Mason needed. He needed someone proud to walk down the beach with him, someone unencumbered by this job, this past, this pressing sense of responsibility that I just couldn't shake. Disgusted at myself, I threw my long-abandoned dinner in the trash and poured myself a shot. Not to get drunk, I'd be back on duty too soon for that, but to feel the burn, to feel something. To remind myself that I wasn't the hollow, cold man that Mason thought I was. He thought I had no heart, but the truth was that he was it. He was my heart, my world, my everything. In hell if I knew how to walk around, do my job with that heart missing. Hell if I wanted to. I'd never thought of myself as lacking in courage. But I was going to have to find some extra in a hurry if I wanted a chance to make this right.
24. Mason.
I told them. I'm ready to go home. You need me.
Wheezing with the effort, my dad sat up in the hospital bed. And the doctor said another day or two, you're lucky you're not losing the leg. Yet. I slumped in the visitor's chair in his hospital room. My everything hurt, and I was beyond tired, to the point that the empty bed on the other side of Dad was pretty tempting.
I've got to talk to Gunnar, see if we can scrape together the bail money for Jimmy. Maybe do a deal.
There's no money. I rubbed my head. I'd had a non-stop tension headache since Jimmy's first call, made worse by my argument with Nash.
None.
I balanced your checkbook. You had to borrow 20 from me for the prescription copay. Gunnar doesn't have it either.
But you...
He had that wheedling tone that I hated, and I held up a hand, cutting him off. Everything I have is sunk into the tavern. I had to do some creative rearranging to find the fee for my lawyer.
Your lawyer?
He made a dismissive noise.
Your poor brother is rotting over there in the jail. That public defender has it out for us.
The world is not out to get the Hanks. I was weary. So weary of being a Hanks. How did I manage to share DNA with Jimmy and Freddy? It was like Jimmy had learned absolutely nothing from Freddy's crimes, letting Chester and who knows who else talk him into vandalizing businesses, and oh yeah, it was all just allegations right now, investigation pending and all that, but I knew in my gut that Jimmy was in on the vandalism. It might come down to whether Chester tattled on him, but the spray paint in his car was damning enough for me. And yes, my lawyer. They're not giving me Lilac fast enough. I need a lawyer for this hearing tomorrow. The morning after I'd lost my freaking head at Nash's place, there had been a scrap of paper shoved under my kitchen door. Call Julie Turner, family lawyer, decent person, local. She'll help. The note wasn't signed, but I recognized Nash's blocky writing. I'd said some pretty awful things. We both had, really. But he'd thought enough to give me a recommendation for a lawyer, and that counted for something. What, I wasn't sure, but it was something, and Julie's rate was far better than someone from Eugene or Portland. Hiring an attorney from out of the area was what Brock and Logan had wanted me to do. I'd recognized Julie from Pride Night at the tavern. She was our librarian's partner, an older woman with a calming demeanor. She'd managed to arrange for a visit with Lilac hours after our first meeting and thought I had a decent chance of getting the emergency placement. She'd immediately become my favorite person in the world. But, of course, Dad would begrudge me her fee.
If I could leave this damn bed, they'd give her to me.
Dad. I didn't have it in me to sugarcoat the truth. You're sick. You can barely get around these days. Your place is a wreck. They're not giving you custody. Like it or not, I'm our best shot.
I wish your sainted mother was here.
His eyes filled with tears, not the first time since this ordeal had begun.
Me too. God, how I wished that.
The social workers might have looked askance at the house, but they would have given her custody, and she would have known what to do to keep Jimmy and Dad in line.
Or that you had a someone, single young guy, like you.
Dad stumbled for words. They're not denying me because I'm gay. The social worker seemed to have far more issue with me being a Hanks than being gay, and Julie was convinced that it was just a matter of jumping through all the right hoops for DHS.
Of course not.
Dad wasn't going to confess to any bigoted assumptions, and he bristled like I was accusing him of something.
Jimmy's the one who's hard on you, not me. I promised your mother.
Another big sniffle. I seized on his emotional reaction.
She'd want me to do this. Want me to step in and do what's right for Lilac.
She would.
Dad looked at me through bleary eyes.
God, I loved that woman. Didn't deserve her.
No, you didn't. I laughed, trying to break up the mood. My parents had been far from perfect, but they'd loved each other almost ferociously, and been intensely loyal to each other. I'd always wanted a love like that, albeit a saner one with a partner deserving of my affection. I'd wanted to know how it felt to love that deeply. And now I knew. And it sucked. I'd lit into Nash because I was hurting, because nothing in my damn life made sense anymore, and because I wanted someone to be there for me, and I wanted it to be him. And it wasn't ever going to be him. So I'd lashed out. I knew, deep down, that he'd only been doing his job. I didn't want special treatment. I just wanted him. Us. A future where we dealt with crap like this together, but a future where we were a couple wouldn't ever happen, and rage over the unfairness of that had made me say a lot of shit, most of which I didn't even remember. All I knew was that I loved Nash, and he didn't love me back. And the timing of that realization was absolutely worthless.
Don't see why you can't get Flint to drop the charges.
Jimmy's gotten to you, I see. I wasn't sure when Jimmy had been allowed a phone call to Dad, but it didn't matter. Gossip traveled fast around these parts, and I'd known that Jimmy and Francine wouldn't keep their traps shut in jail.
It's true, then? You and him?
Dad pulled a wounded face, begging me with his eyes to deny it. But I was tired. Very tired, so I shrugged.
Does it make a difference?
He's not going to drop the charges. He can't do that.
Does it make a difference? Of course it makes a difference!
Dad's face turned purple, and he gestured wildly. I needed to calm him down, or I'd have a nurse in here on my case.
That Flint has had it in for our family since before he was an officer. His father did, too. Their whole family looks down on us. He's just using you.
And there it was. The gut punch I'd figured was coming. Nash hadn't used me, or at least no more than I'd let him, but my dad's words still tickled the back of my brain, an itch I wasn't ever going to be free of. Had this been just sex for Nash? It had slid way past that for me, but maybe it had always been only physical for him. He'd let me go, after all, let me rant and rave and storm off, and hadn't come after me, hadn't texted. He'd left the note, but that was the sort of neighborly kindness he might do for anyone.
No one's using anyone.
My voice was rough and shaky.
I get that you don't want to be alone, but why not Adam, someone closer to your age?
I had to laugh at that. Adam's like my third brother, the good one. We're never going to hook up.
Flint won't ever give you a future,
Dad said firmly. And I knew he was correct. There'd been no future here, right from the start.
This is one more strike against us, one more thing to hold over our heads.
Take a breath, I ordered. It's not like that. He's not like that. You and Jimmy and Francine need to stop spouting stupid conspiracy theories, especially if you want me to be able to help Lilac. And that was where my focus had to stay, on helping Lilac, on saving what was left of my family. Much as I wanted to go to Nash, fight for a future together, I couldn't allow myself the luxury. Family had to come first, just like his job did for him. Dad was right about one thing. There was no future here.
Nash. My phone rang 10 minutes before I needed to drive to the station. My heart galloped. It wouldn't be Mason. Hadn't been Mason since our argument in my kitchen. But hope was a stupid thing. And it wasn't like I would know what to say, even if it was Mason. I didn't have the right words for him yet. Wasn't sure if there even was a way to fix things between us. And sure enough, it was my mother's number flashing on my screen. I leaned against the kitchen counter, taking my time to hit answer.
Nash, sweetheart, how are you?
Something about the strain in her voice told me this was more than just a welfare check. I'm good. Heading to the station in a few, so I don't have much time.
That's fine. I just wanted to talk about me coming down, end of next week.
Oh, hell. I'd forgotten about my father's birthday. She always liked to put flowers on his grave in Easton's, treating the occasion as some sort of macabre holiday. My neck tightened at the thought. Is Trisha driving you? I didn't like her making the long drive on her own, and public transit wasn't a realistic option way out here. No way was she suffering the bus to Coos Bay.
Yes, her and the kids, too. You'll have room?
That had never been a question in the past, and the hesitation in her voice had me on edge. Of course. Guest rooms for you and Trisha, and the kids can do the slumber party in the living room again.
Oh, good. I wasn't sure you'd be free.
Work's a bear lately. I deliberately misunderstood her. But I'll make the time to take you out to the cemetery.
That's not what... I shouldn't have to tell you this.
Then don't. I braced myself for her next words.
But there's awful rumors swirling about you. terrible things. About you and a Hanks. I said there was no way, of course. You wouldn't take up with someone. Not again. You wouldn't risk your career like that. Not for a Hanks.
Oh, I would, and I did, and I'd do it again. Mom, you know I'm gay. I'd never said the words before. Not directly, anyway. We danced around the issue when she'd been set on moving up to Portland, and we'd always couched any further discussion in vague terms. It weren't doing either of us any favors. Not anymore. Her sigh could have sliced the county in half.
Yes, but I thought you learned your lesson with that teacher. Your preferences can't be public knowledge. You know that, Nash.
She made it sound like a taste for rhubarb pie over apple. I sighed right back, because I shouldn't have to explain this to her. It's not something I can just turn off. Steve was a good man, better than I deserved, and I'm tired. Tired of skulking around in secret, hiding people I care about because of the job.
So it's true. You and this Hanks kid? Oh, Nash.
He's not a kid. The age difference might still be something I was coming to terms with, but I wasn't going to let her discuss Mason that way. He's 28, and he's nothing like his family.
They're all the same. Users and losers, your father always said. Oh, what would he say about this? Have you thought about that at all?
Only every damn day. Mason's not a loser, or using me. If anything, I'd done the using. Keeping him at arm's length when I knew he'd likely wanted something more. Something real. Letting him tell me as much in Portland and then still hurting him. He's a business owner. Upstanding citizen. And he's trying to stand by his family best he can. There's a kid involved. I like to think Dad would respect that. He wouldn't, of course. Not even a small amount. He'd been a hard, grudge-filled man who thought his judgment was the be-all and end-all. But I liked imagining a world where he could see someone like Mason turn their life around, become more than what they'd been raised to be, and see beyond labels and assumptions. But that had never been my father. Mom's answering tisk said she knew it too.
He'd want you to do the right thing. Break this off, whatever it is. Try to salvage your reputation. You can deny the rumors. People will believe you.
Yes, yes, they would. I knew that. Holmes hadn't asked me whether Jimmy's venom was true, and I knew she'd back me up if I said he was full of shit. Whole department would, really. But that wasn't the issue. Mason would still be the one hurting, and I wanted to go to him something awful, to comfort him, to protect him from any gossip. I'd thought the denial was the best way to protect us both, but the more I missed him, the less I thought that. Denial was selfish, and would only end with me alone, more bitter than ever. I liked who I'd been with Mason, liked the man who was learning to cook, who laughed and smiled at the end of the day, liked the man who could show his favorite places to his guy, share his hobbies and his life, and be richer for the effort. I liked Mason here in my house, liked the sound of his voice in my big kitchen, liked him hogging space in my shower and coaxing me into a crowded tub. Simple truth was, I liked that version of myself too much to let Mason go, regardless of whether it was the smart option. Maybe I don't want them to, I said at last. Maybe I don't want to grow old alone. Maybe you're okay with that future for me, but I'm not. Not any longer. Not since I've seen what I could have if I tried.
You don't have to be alone. You've got your family. Your job.
I couldn't believe the next words that came out of my mouth, but they tumbled out all the same. The job's not enough. Not anymore. I'm not like Dad. I can't have it be my entire life. I don't want to be old before my time, stroking out because I never took a minute away.
You watch your mouth. Your father gave everything he had to that city.
Yes,
and nothing left over for us, for you. I want something more for my life. As soon as I said it, I believed it. I did want something more. Someone more.
But a Hanks, really?
My mother's tearful voice awoke an ache behind my ribs and a tightness in my throat, but it didn't loosen my resolve. He's more than his family. Guilt washed over me. I'd done a piss-poor job of convincing Mason of that. Made him think I was ashamed of him. Made him feel not worthy. And hadn't really corrected him. Hadn't stood up for him. For us. And that had to change. Starting right now.
Oh, Nash. I hope you know what you're doing.
My mother sounded weary and resigned. But I'd never been more determined. For the first time in a very long time, I knew exactly what I was doing. My only worry was whether it would work.
25. Mason. The county seat was 45 minutes south of us, with the courthouse right next to the jail. I'd had far too much experience with this drive in my life, as well as with both buildings. Dad was still up at the hospital in Coos Bay, and cranky though he was, I really wished he'd been able to come with me to the hearing. Despite our argument in the hospital room, he'd given a statement to the social worker supporting my bid for custody, and I supposed that was as much as I could hope for. This building felt too big for me, the day too momentous. The courthouse was an old stone building full of wide, drafty hallways lined with long, wooden benches. I wore my best clothes, the ones I'd worn in Portland to make the presentation to Brock's investors, tie and all.
"This is most likely just a formality," Julie said, patting my arm.
We'd done all the paperwork, met with the social workers more than once. They'd even been to my house, looked at my car. We should have everything they wanted, but my life had shown me that should had a way of not working out. My mom should be alive. Freddy should have been smarter than to listen to his friends. Nash should love me back. Nothing went as it should. I'm nervous. I admitted outside the courtroom. We were early, and another hearing was going on before ours.
"Well, don't be." She gave me a warm smile. "This judge is nice, compassionate. She'll listen fairly, and that's all we can hope."
Actually, it wasn't. I didn't only want a fair hearing, I wanted Lilac with me. Anything short of that was going to be a crushing defeat. But I nodded anyway. No sense in unloading on Julie.
"I'm going to duck into the restroom. I'll be right back."
I sank onto the nearest bench as she walked away, her brown heels clip-clopping on the marble floor.
"This seat taken?"
A familiar voice had me glancing over.
"Nash!"
He wasn't in uniform, but he was dressed up in a crisp white shirt with a gray tie and gray pants.
"What are you doing here?"
Unable to keep the suspicion out of my voice, I still slid over to make room for him.
"Are you testifying at the hearing?"
"No. I told you. I can't do that."
Deep lines of regret creased Nash's face, and it felt like I had similar ones on my heart. So nothing had changed. Not really.
"Not that they'd ask me to. Anyway, this one is likely to be mainly procedural.
So why come?"
My voice was cold, not something I recognized.
"I'm not here on official business. I took the morning off. I came for you."
"For me?"
"I thought you could use a friend today, whichever way this goes. And I want to be that friend."
His eyes seemed more green than usual, deep pools of sympathy, and I wanted to touch him so badly it hurt.
But what about your conflict of interest? People are going to talk more than they have been, you showing up here.
I'm working on the conflict of interest.
Nash sighed.
Holmes will handle the investigation, and I'm talking with the county and the state board on other steps. I'm not the first cop to end up with a conflict of interest, and there are procedures in place.
So you told them? About us?
I gaped at him.
I had no choice.
That wasn't exactly what I wanted to hear, but Julie came back over.
Chief, how lovely you could make it.
I'm not the only one.
Nash gestured down the hall. Walking through the double doors were Logan and Adam's mother and sister. Dolly from the donut place and a number of our servers and regular customers followed. Even Stuffy Everly from the visitor center was there.
What the... I don't understand.
We thought it might help the court to see that you're not alone. Julie said, gently, that you've got a whole community to support you.
Thought you weren't going to pull strings.
I hissed at Nash.
I didn't. They wanted to help, and I can't testify that I can be here. For you.
He didn't get a chance to reply because the crowd was upon us then, everyone offering words of support. I hadn't realized how big an impact our business had made in just a few months. To have so many people ready to go to bat for me was very humbling, and had my sinuses burning. A clerk informed me it was time to enter the courtroom. Julie and I sat in the front of the small room, but I was painfully aware of Nash right behind me, a warm but highly confounding presence.
What was he doing? What did he want? Was this merely,
"All rise"?
The bailiff summoned our attention, and I had to drop my endless questions as my heart hammered faster. Nash and I would have to wait.
This was it.
Lilac's future was on the line. The attorney for DHS spoke first, answering some questions the judge had about where the case stood. Neither Francine nor Jimmy had made bail. Francine was facing charges of assault, child endangerment, interfering with law enforcement, and possession of a controlled substance. She'd been found with drugs when they'd searched her at the jail, adding to the trouble she was in. Jimmy was similarly up a creek without a paddle, assault, child endangerment, DUI, and the ongoing investigation into potential vandalism charges. Finally, it was Julie's turn to speak on my behalf. She made an eloquent little speech about how my request for emergency placement should take priority under the law, as I was a relative, the only one to come forward. Then she indicated all the people behind me. And Mr. Hanks has the support of his community. I know this court may have concerns given his age and childlessness, but Mr. Hanks won't be doing this alone. For the first time in days, I felt my shoulders relax. I wouldn't be alone if the court gave me this chance. I'd been so damn alone all week. All the hours spent on the highway between Rainbow Cove and the hospital and the county offices, it had been like shoving a huge boulder up a cliff. But sitting there, with my friends behind me, pillars of the town there, too, I realized for the first time that it wasn't just me against the world. The whole town wasn't simply waiting to see if I failed. I had roots here, connections, a network to hold me up. And it was staggering. Realizing that they were all there had made the drive for me and Lilac. That I was that important to them. The judge asked Julie about the home study. That was still pending, and I had a checklist of things to do around the house before a second visit from the social workers. My heart sank. Maybe none of this mattered. Maybe the court was going to find me lacking even with a small army behind me.
This court always gives first priority under the law to relative placement. However, This is not absolute. Oh, please, oh, please, oh, please.
I squished my eyes shut, unable to watch. The judge continued.
In this case, though, I think it is clearly in the child's best interests that temporary custody be granted to Mr. Hanks, and that the state work with him to quickly complete the home study and get the placement ASAP. The next hearing on this matter will be...
She discussed the next steps in the case, the many steps ahead for Lilac and me, depending on what happened with Jimmy and Francine. But I couldn't think about that. Could only rub the bridge of my nose and exhale noisily. I'd done it. Nash leaned forward and squeezed my shoulder.
See?
He whispered.
This will all work out.
I still wasn't sure I quite believed him, and I had no idea whether I had that certainty where he and I were concerned, but in that moment, I was profoundly grateful he was there. I was getting Lilac. Everything else could wait.
Nash. I'd been around the legal system long enough to know that Mason and his niece had a long, long road to travel. But my heart was still light as I headed back to Rainbow Cove. There had been too many people around Mason after the hearing for us to talk, and that was all right. I hadn't come hoping he'd take my sorry ass back, but rather to lend moral support, regardless of where we stood. The talk we desperately needed to have could wait until we didn't have an audience. So I had nodded at him, trying to tell him with my eyes that I'd be around later, after I settled a few things at the station. I was already leaping ahead to later, though, rehearsing what I'd say, when Holmes came into my office. Chief? She stepped inside, closed my seldom-shut door.
I just had a phone call from the Ethics Board. Are you sure you want to formally recuse yourself from the Hanks case?
I am. It didn't matter what Mason and I presently were. I knew what I hoped we'd be. And that was what mattered. This was the right thing to do, even if my mother and others might not see it that way.
Is this because of what Jimmy Hanks is saying? Because you know I've got your back. I'll say that there's nothing going on between you and that family, other than a lot of bad will on Jimmy's side.
She crossed her arms. I know you've got my back, and I appreciate it. I took a deep breath. But it's true. I am seeing Mason Hanks. To Holmes's credit, she didn't flinch. Didn't look all that surprised, actually. She nodded.
Mason seems like a good guy. I heard he's getting custody of the kid. That's a big job.
He'll be up for it. My confidence in our future might be shaky, but I'd never believed more in Mason as a person.
You sure you're ready for that? For all of it, I mean?
She leaned against my desk. The room was small to begin with, and the conversation had me feeling like the walls were inching toward me. We weren't particularly close, Holmes and I. I'd hired her, trained her, respected the hell out of her, but we didn't share confidences or offer more than passing friendship. Thus, I was tempted to lie, and more than a little surprised when the truth slipped out. I'm not sure. Guess we'll all find out.
Well, you have my support, and Derek's for what it's worth, and I know an out officer up in...
I'm not looking to start a club, I said more gruffly than I'd intended. I took a breath and backed down. Thank you, though, for the support.
You let me know if there's anything I can do. And not just about the Hanks case.
Her brown eyes were full of compassion. I wasn't quite sure I deserved. Will do. My throat felt strangely tight.
You heading out soon?
In just a few. I finished up my latest round of notes on the Hinkie shooting and headed home, making sure to drive by the tavern. Not surprisingly, Mason's car wasn't there. On my way home, I spotted it in his driveway, so I gathered up some things at my house that I'd set out that morning and walked to Mason's place. down the sidewalk even. I was done with stealth. I could have texted him, but I didn't want to make it easy for him to shut me out. Still, my heart pounded as I waited for him to answer the front door. Nash? His eyes went wide when he saw me standing there, holding the two overflowing shopping bags. What's this? This had gone much better in my head. I coughed. Figured you might need some things. Things? He eyed the bag like they might contain live grenades. I went through a bunch of our stuff in the attic. Pink sheets and some other bedding from Trisha's old room. A doll. The bear, though, used to be mine. I was rambling, and didn't seem able to turn it off. I'm building the bed right now, actually. Finally, Mason ushered me in. Adam's mom had a spare twin bed, so it's just a matter of putting together the frame. Adam's working my shift at the tavern, or he'd be able to help me. I've got a long list of stuff to get done before the social worker comes in the morning for a final check. I can help. I swallowed hard. Can you? His eyes were guarded. Isn't that going to cause issues for you? I mean, it was nice of you coming to the hearing, but I don't want you losing your job or outed over this. The gossip will die down if you let it. I don't want it to. That wasn't the complete truth. I hated knowing that people were talking about us, and that probably wasn't going to change. But I'd take the gossip if it meant having a shot at Mason. And I'm not losing my job. I'm doing everything above board, declaring the conflict of interest and all. There are rules in place, guidelines for things like in-laws. Mason's laugh was more than a little bitter. My family's not your in-laws. Better safe to treat it like that than be sorry. I quoted the person I'd spoken with at length at the ethics board. I don't want to hide, Mason. Maybe I do. He studied the scarred hardwood floor of the living room. I didn't stop and consider how bad the gossip could be. People are saying I roped you into something. Like, I don't know, like I corrupted you. Maybe you don't want to be tied to a Hanks. Setting the bags on the counter, I took his shoulders, made him look at me. I want to be tied to this, Hanks. You're worth more to me than some gossip. My family hates you. Mason's voice was pained. My dad thinks you're just using me. Is that what you think? I asked sharply. No. He shook his head. Not really. But this thing, it got complicated hella quick. You deserve a better coming out than this. Someone with less baggage. I don't want someone. I want you. And we've all got baggage. I'm not coming out for you. You're not? Looking understandably confused, his eyes narrowed. The lone lamp in the room cast deep shadows over his face. But it was the shadows in his eyes that made me ache. I'm coming out for me. Because I'm almost 40 now, and it's beyond time that I stop running from my father's ghost. Because I'm worth it, every bit as much as you are. Because I deserve to be happy and not be alone. It took you to show me that, but I'm doing this for me. It's time I was free. Yeah, Mason's voice was husky. Your family isn't going to be any more understanding than mine, though. I thought back to my conversation with my mother. Nope. But I can't live my life by their rules. And I think deep down my mother does want me to be happy. And you make me happy. I do? He tilted his head to one side, considering me. For real? Because it's not just sex for me, Nash. There are some serious feelings involved here. Feelings I didn't count on, but I can't ignore them. I don't want you to. It's not just sex for me, either. Unable to stop myself, I stroked his arms. But you've never been out before. Maybe you don't want to tie yourself to me.
My laugh echoed through the nearly bare room. You seriously think I want to play the field?
Maybe.
He worried his lip with his teeth. You're the best man I know. I'm sorry I didn't tell you that before, that I made you think somehow that you're not worthy. There's no one else I want to be with because I know you're it for me. I can't change that I'm a Hanks. I'm always going to be related to Jimmy and Freddy, and chances are that I'm going to have Lilac for a while. It's all a part of you. I get it. I wanted to kiss him so badly, but his face was still wary. I'm still going to be the police chief. Late nights, lots of stress. It's not going to be a picnic being with me either. But I want us to try. For real this time. No hiding. You want to date? Mason lifted an eyebrow. You could call it that, I allowed. I want more cooking lessons and more fishing and more late lunches. But yeah, if you want dates, like movies, and whatever else it is people do, I'm game. Mason finally laughed. Cooking and fishing and eating sound good to me. I want that, too. Not like I'm going to have much time for the dinner and a movie kind of dating. He shook his head. God, I have so much to do. I'm not sure I'm ready for this, Nash. Then let's tackle your list. Together. We still had a long ways to go, but when he nodded, I finally felt like I had my footing after days of treading through wet sand and sharp rocks. Maybe it was going to take more time than I'd like, but this was a start, a really good one. The next step was getting Mason to truly believe that I meant what I said. He was the guy for me. No turning back.
26. Mason. Nash was saying all the right things, the things I'd waited all summer to hear, but I wasn't quite ready to throw myself into his arms. I was damn tired, and I was afraid I might not get back up again if I let myself collapse against him, with the relief coursing through me. I needed to get the room together for Lilac, and maybe I needed to stew over everything that Nash had said. I stepped away from him, approaching his bags on the couch. It was a sweet peace offering, bringing me stuff from his childhood and from his nieces and nephews. "Let's take this to the spare room," I said with more decisiveness than I felt. "Then we can put the bed together."
"All right. Mind if I take off my uniform shirt?"
I wasn't ever going to turn down a chance to ogle Nash in a white T-shirt and his uniform pants, so I nodded, watching as he undid his buttons and set the shirt carefully on the couch. Things still seemed very tenuous, like we were feeling our way out of a dark sea cave. Ready for building, he followed me to the spare room, and we worked in near silence, setting up the bed frame and getting the mattress on it. Then I made up the bed using the sheets Nash had brought instead of the plain white that Adam's mom had donated. Lilac would like the pink, I thought. My throat went as tight and fuzzy as a shrunken sweater as Nash arranged the doll and bear against the pillow. Fuck. This was real. I was about to get a kid. And Nash. And I wasn't sure how to cope with either. A choked noise escaped my throat.
"Hey, now."
Nash drew me to him.
"It's been a long day, yeah?"
"Yeah." I gratefully seized that excuse as I finally let myself be held by him, relaxing into his grip.
"You go take one of those long showers you're so fond of. I'm going to put the outlet covers on and stabilize the dresser like they want. Get the last of your list done."
"You don't have to do that." My voice was thick. God, he was so nice to me. Nicer than I deserved after all the things I'd said.
"Nash, I'm sorry. We can both say sorry later."
He steered me out of the room and into the small bathroom.
"Right now you're exhausted and running on empty. Let me help."
It was a sign of how weary I was that I nodded. I stripped off my dusty work clothes and turned the spray to super hot as Nash backed out of the room. His suggestion that I shower had been a good one. The hot water worked its usual magic, and I stayed in until the water ran tepid, trying to get a grip on my roiling emotions. It had been a day. Nash, Lilac, everyone's support, it was almost too much. Enjoying the puttering sounds coming from the front of the house, I slipped on a pair of flannel pants. I had a strong feeling about where this night was headed, but walking out in a towel or less felt a bit presumptuous. There were still things I needed to say, even if Nash wanted to wave them off. I found him in the kitchen, putting the finishing touches on two grilled cheese sandwiches.
"Well, look at you," I grinned at him. "Guess I did teach you something after all."
"You taught me a lot."
Nash's face was serious.
"More than you know."
Throat like sandpaper, I nodded.
"And I didn't burn anything."
He slid me a plate across the counter.
"Did the shower help?"
"Yeah. There's still so much to do.
I did the outlets, the dresser, swept the room, and made sure the lamp was far enough from the bed." "I think you're ready, Mason. They're not going to turn you down. You heard the court. The judge wants you to have custody."
Afraid that if I spoke I might cry, I nodded again.
"You're going to be terrific at this. Really. I believe in you."
I hadn't realized how much I needed to hear that until right then. My eyes burned, and I scrubbed furiously at them.
"I treated you like shit. And you still believe in me?"
"Of course I do."
Nash gathered me up in a hug.
"You were hurting. I get that. And you were right about one thing. I did spend all summer denying that I had a heart. I didn't treat you like you deserved."
"I'm sorry I asked you to pull favors. I didn't really want you to. I was just so scared and angry and alone."
"You're not alone now. Not any longer."
Nash pressed a soft kiss to my forehead.
"Thanks."
I brushed a kiss across his mouth.
"For everything."
"You're welcome. Now eat."
Instead of deepening the kiss as I'd expected, Nash steered me to the table, then sat opposite me with his own sandwich.
"I missed this," I admitted.
"Me too."
He gave me a tentative smile, one that I felt all the way to my bare toes.
"Tell me where the good early fall fishing is," I said.
Still not able to handle heavy conversation, but needing some sort of goalpost to look forward to. Nash took the bait, and we spent our meal talking rivers and fishing and the type of ties he might make me. It was only after I'd washed our plates that my heart started fluttering again.
"Do you want me to go?"
Nash asked, looking at the door instead of my face.
"No,"
I said honestly. I dried my hands, then pulled him toward me.
"I want you to stay."
"For always," my heart added, even if my mouth wasn't up to such fanciful declarations. I pulled him to my bedroom, where I threw back the covers and helped him strip off the T-shirt and his pants.
"I should shower," he mumbled. "You're all clean."
"Not caring."
Getting him naked had become my top priority. I pushed my pants down, and then we tumbled into the bed in a heap of limbs and bare skin. I pulled the covers up around us, both because I knew he loved that, and because I needed it too. Needed to be surrounded by his warmth and closeness every bit as much as I needed sex. tugging him over me. I lost myself in his kiss. His lips were as tentative as his smiles had been, gently seeking and questioning. That wasn't going to do, not at all. I growled before taking over, chasing his tongue, claiming his lips.
Mason.
He sighed against my mouth.
Slow down. We've got all night. Don't want this over.
It's not. I was starting to believe that we might actually have a future beyond tonight, but that didn't make me any less desperate for him. I ran my hands down his sides, thrilling to his warm, strong flesh under my palms. He gasped when I reached his ass and pulled him firmly against me, letting him feel how turned on and needy I was.
"Missed you,"
I whispered.
"You've got me."
He kissed me fiercely, stroking my face.
"You've got me."
"Good."
I surged up against him, hard cock dragging against hard cock, making me shiver.
"Fuck me."
"You sure?" "This is plenty for me, and you've had a day,
which is why I need you."
I bit at his neck. "Want to feel you in me. Want to feel you tomorrow. Know that I've got you."
"I'm not going anywhere."
Nash reached over to the nightstand, got the stuff I kept there. He kissed his way down my torso, but I yanked at his shoulders.
"Nuh-uh. Don't want to wait." "I do."
He pinned me to the mattress before engulfing my cock in his hot mouth. As usual, he didn't tease, just started a hard and fast rhythm that had me chanting his name. I wasn't ever going to get tired of Nash doing this for me, even if I did want him inside me in the worst way.
"Nash, come on."
Fumbling for the lube, I shoved it at him.
"Don't want to shoot yet."
"Bossy, bossy."
He clucked at me as he opened the tube. After taking care of the condom, he slicked us both up. He knew exactly the fine line between teasing and torture that I liked, and knew that what I really needed was him. Groaning, he pressed inside in a long, slow stroke. I shuddered beneath him, still gobsmacked by the intensity of this, even after all these weeks together. It felt like the first time all over again, my mind struggling to adjust every bit as much as my body. Being claimed by Nash was seriously the best head trip in the world, one that pushed everything else from my brain. All the events of the last week or so fled until it was only us. Moving together, my legs hitched up around his waist, his abs rubbing against my cock with each thrust, and us kissing, always kissing.
"Mason, God, you... incredible."
Sweat dripped down Nash's face, and the covers were long since tossed aside. He managed to hit my gland on each upward thrust, making me moan. As much as I wanted to watch him, my eyes drifted shut.
"Need to come."
Shifting his weight, Nash got a hand between us, started a leisurely stroke.
"So impatient."
"Missed you. Missed this."
I rocked up into his touch.
"Me too. I need you, Mason. So much."
His tone was tortured, and I believed him, really believed him, for the first time all evening. I wasn't in this thing by myself. He needed me as much as I needed him. I still wasn't precisely sure what I had to offer him, but in that moment I was determined to be enough. Back arching, I fucked up into his hand.
"Love this.
Love you."
I didn't want the first time I said the words to be in the middle of sex, but I was thinking them, owning them.